You're tuned in to the Health After 30 podcast, and today we're talking about the prevalence of metabolic syndrome in women, the impacts of our lifestyle choices on this condition, and the transformative power of plant-based foods in reversing its symptoms. Please keep in mind that this podcast is for informational purposes only and does not intend to treat or cure any condition. Today, I am joined with Sammy Williams, who is a registered nutritionist and has a master's degree in human nutrition. She's also a biology teacher, and the way in which she explains information is just so easy to understand. And she specializes in metabolic syndrome. So we're going to focus on nutrition and lifestyle choices, but we're also going to go into how this condition disproportionately affects women and the silent toll that it's taking on our bodies, what we can look for, and how to address it. We also are going to talk about intuitive eating and how this can kind of bring everything together and what we're doing and how to understand our bodies a bit better. I so appreciate the way in which Sammy works. I am very much a supporter of the approach that she takes, as it's similar to the approach that I also take. If you yourself or you know anyone who has metabolic syndrome, please feel free to share this episode with them, as I'm sure there is at least one thing that they'll be able to take away from it. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Alana Bonneman, and let's get into today's episode with Sammy Williams. Hey, I'm Alana Bonneman, naturopath and holistic nutritionist. This podcast is dedicated to reclaiming your health by harnessing yourself as your biggest asset. Get ready, because this is where we stand up for your body's ability to heal, go against outdated norms, and say yes to change, creating true and lasting success, all from the inside out. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Health After 30 podcast, and let's get started. Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of the Health After 30 podcast. Today, I'm sitting down with Sammy Williams, and we are going to get into metabolic syndrome, also known as metabolic X. It probably comes under a lot of other different names as well. But I'd like to kind of go in and ask, because our lifestyle, the way we live, most of us live, is pretty, it's pretty dire these days. How concerned are we about metabolic X or metabolic syndrome when it comes to women? How concerned should we be?
Well, I think the first thing to say really is that, like, a lot of people don't know what it is. Actually, a lot of people that I work with, a lot of people that I have conversations with, don't know what metabolic syndrome is. They've never heard of it, but they have heard of the individual symptoms. So they've heard of prediabetes, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes. They might have heard of fatty liver disease, alcoholic and non-alcoholic. Mm. They might have heard of having high cholesterol. They might have heard of bad cholesterol and good cholesterol, so HDL and LDL. And, you know, they might have heard of obesity and that. So they basically have heard of the symptoms of that, but they don't know that actually all of those conditions are a collection of symptoms that show that the metabolism is not functioning correctly. And that is basically what metabolic syndrome is. So this actually impacts a large proportion of the population. I'm in the UK, and in the UK we have sort of between like 63 to 65% of adults who are suffering with either overweight or obesity. And that on its own isn't necessarily an indication of metabolic syndrome. But if you put that together with all of the other statistics on diabetes and other conditions that I mentioned before, then that is becoming more of an issue. And, you know, our lifestyles and the food choices we're making are really kind of contributing to that. And it's becoming much more common in other countries around the world where, you know, maybe they're not as developed. In the West, you know, these conditions have been around for the last 20 years, really. But in other countries, you know, it's becoming more prevalent there. And so I think raising awareness around that is really important. And that's one of the things that I advocate for.
If you're like most people who tune into the Health After 30 podcast, you know that good health and quality of life go hand in hand. It's beyond our lifespan, but rather our health span that we need to focus on. Aging naturally, longevity, getting into old age, and keeping up with things that we love should be a priority. Please meet Kimberly Rebecca. She's a naturopathic doctor who uses peptide bioregulators as well as a longevity protocol to help enhance energy, get that mental clarity good, and balance your hormones into old age. please follow any of the links below to get in touch with her and don't miss a chance to work with her today.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what you said. It's metabolic syndrome is this umbrella term for all these different conditions that so many people are experiencing.
Yeah.
And I guess when we start to think of, because when I think about metabolic syndrome, I actually think about my mom. She experienced this, and a lot of the older generation I see start to experience. It's not something that, you know, perhaps having type 2 diabetes or high cholesterol, bad cholesterol and stuff like this. It's not necessarily something that we have in our younger years. It's something that develops over time. And maybe it starts with one symptom, right, or the next.
Exactly, yeah.
How do you usually see it play out with your clients, and how does it usually come to you?
I think it's been kind of almost normalized that as you get older, you start to develop diseases, unfortunately. And I think a lot of people that I see and that I work with, they've had maybe mild symptoms for quite a long time, but because they don't necessarily know that it's a progressive condition, they haven't sought help. You know, a lot of people don't like going to the doctor and saying, oh, I feel this, I don't feel right. And, you know, the mindset quite often is, oh, it'll be fine, you know, I'll get over it, or just brush it under the carpet. And so it's not necessarily until there is a quite obvious symptom. And quite often for me, with clients I work with, that is, you know, obesity and it's pre-diabetes. So those are the two generally that people kind of start with. And they maybe then, you know, through working with me or another healthcare professional, they start to look more deeply into their blood work. And that shows things like high triglycerides, which is like high fat in the blood, shows that it's not clearing effectively. That's also another symptom of metabolic syndrome. And so, you know, they maybe look at their cholesterol levels. You know, they've never actually had a blood test and looked at their, you know, fasting sugar levels, at their fat like metabolism. And so that's usually the starting point. Or weight loss. You know, that's a lot of people just want weight loss, and they maybe don't know that there are other underlying issues going on until they start working with somebody like me, and I will, you know, get them to get a specific blood test and look at all of these markers and then talk to them about that. And I think, you know, we are very sort of aware of weight as a society. You know, weight loss is a big thing and the diet industry, but it's looking at like more underlying things that are happening in the body, which is also important too. And I think if you focus on, you know, changing those markers as well, that's going to lead to weight loss in the long term. And actually, weight loss on its own shouldn't be the main focus.
As you end up getting on these extreme diets and
exactly.
We talked about just before we jumped on air about intuitive eating and how important this is. But I do appreciate that there's some conditions that just stop people in their tracks. Pre-diabetics, obesity.
Yeah. It is scary to find out that there's something potentially wrong with you. And, you know, sometimes it takes quite a serious issue for somebody to kickstart themselves into change, you know, because dietary change is hard. Like, it's not a simple thing to do. And, you know, it's not just about following a meal plan and cooking different recipes. It's about, you know, shifting your mindset and changing your behavior. And for a lot of people, that's something that's been embedded for 40, 50, 60 years of their life. And undoing that and making new neural connections in the brain, you know, that takes time.
Absolutely.
And we're very impatient. You know, we want it now. We want like the results right now. So, you know, to have this injection and all your troubles will be gone, you know, and that just doesn't exist, unfortunately.
Not for long-term sustainable. No. And when you're also undoing a lot of the things that have now created metabolic syndrome, it is a long process. And you're right. Like it's about a complete habit change and mindset change and basically reshuffling the cards and having a different lifestyle. That can be really difficult.
Yeah. Definitely. Because some people, you know, have been living in a certain way for many years, and it's also what they grew up with. Mm. And, you know, we've all been programmed as children, like up until the age of 7, our brains are very open to learning, you know, behavior change and programming. And whatever you experience in those first 7 years of your life is really kind of running your subconscious mind. And actually a lot of the choices and behaviors we have as adults are subconscious. They're not really conscious, but in order to change, you have to change that as well. And that's what takes the time. You know, our brain is very adaptable. You know, we can, like, neuroplasticity is the theory of, you know, being able to make new neural connections. And this is something that is an amazing discovery that we can do this. And we're, you know, we are doing it all the time anyway. You know, we're always learning new things. We're always, you know, developing like that. And And I think, you know, applying that same kind of theory to your own lifestyle and dietary changes is definitely possible. And it's what I do every day with people I work with.
I would love to go deeper into this because it's the biggest challenge I see time and time again, especially because the health industry is fitting all these things that we should be doing all the time, whether it's from our sleep to our mental health, to what we're eating, to, you know, moving, to how our phone habits should be. There are so many different things. And I feel that there's a big overwhelm and we're inundated with information.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Do you have an approach to kind of break this down to the nuts and bolts that maybe make it easier for people to grasp, to start making change?
Yeah, absolutely. So I basically run a 3-month program. And at the beginning of that, I look at people's data. I found that when somebody can see their data in black and white, it does something different in their mind. It actually makes them see it for what it is. And I obviously sit with them and explain everything as well and answer their questions. And I think for a lot of people, that's never happened to them before. And so, you know, knowing like a baseline of where they're at right now and the potential of where they can get to is obviously the first sort of part of like getting that motivation. And they're already motivated to change because they've decided to work with me and to take on this challenge. So usually, you know, talking about like how that process is going to unfold helps them too. Yeah. And I worked in a detox center in Thailand for a year, and I, you know, saw these amazing transformations that people go through when they do a very kind of, this is a very structured detox involving like bentonite clay and psyllium husk, and you know, they would drink sort of detox soups and things like that. And the detox that I take my clients through is not that severe. It's using natural foods to enhance the body's natural detox processes, because the liver and the kidneys are always doing that, the skin, the breath, you know, we're always getting rid of toxins. So, but it's enhancing that process and then not putting more toxins back in. You know, that's one of the biggest sort of, I guess, learnings of that first week, is that you can clear this out and then you can start to like nourish yourself in a way that is optimal for you. And, you know, going through somebody's diet diary, I find is a really interesting process for them as well, because, I mean, how often do we write down the foods that we're eating every day? Never. And so actually going through all the nutrients that they've consumed and looking for excesses and deficiencies. And, you know, that's also a very interesting process for people. Like, I think the first sort of 2 weeks of the process for me is always discussing like the fact that this is actually a mental thing. Like the way that they're eating is to do with their behavior. And I read The 5 AM Club. I don't know if you've ever heard of that book by Robin Sharma. And he talks about behavior change a lot in that, because, you know, you say to most people, get up at 5 AM and they're like, no way, I could never do that. Mm-hmm. It's just that, you know, you're telling yourself you can't, so you probably can't. And he has a very sort of structured like explanation of habit change in that. And so I use a little bit from there, this sort of cycle of like having a trigger. So, for example, starting to do intermittent fasting for a week, eating at different times of day, that then becomes like a ritual. So you get used to it because you're repeating it, and then you repeat it and that builds consistency. A lot of my clients will see their blood sugar average, so average glucose, go from about 8 to 8.5 down to about 6. And that is really motivating for them, because they're like, wow, this is actually really making a big difference very quickly. And so that just obviously, like, you know, gives them that sort of feeling that they're on the right track. And that starts to change your brain. You know, it's that physical like observation of data and stuff that actually helps the brain to start changing. And then I also talk to them about the process of behavior change. There's lots of theories about the time that takes, but you know, from the reading that I've done, I would, and my experience as well, I would say about sort of 2 months. It takes kind of 2 months for it to become familiar and to feel more automatic. Yeah. And I talk to them about the sort of stages that they'll go through in that process as well.
I think it's really important. I like how you have that trajectory. It's like, okay, this is how it's going to roll out.
Yeah.
Because they know, okay, this is actually going to happen after a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And not just, when am I going to feel the change? Am I seeing the change? When's it happening?
Yeah, exactly. And the first week can be quite challenging, but also, like I said, you know, it is very effective and people feel good after it because they've suddenly just reduced inflammation in their body. They're not swollen anymore. You know, they feel like lighter and their brain is clearer and, you know, all these kind of subtle changes that add up to quite a big change. And that's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I promote like a plant-based approach through my program. I don't get my clients to become vegan or to cut out meat or anything like that, but just for this process of real like healing in the body, that's really important.
Yeah, as you said, like supporting the already functioning detox pathways in the body.
Exactly.
And I really like that. I like that approach. I'd like to also ask about hormonal impact. Women who have gone through perimenopause, through menopause, they have indirectly also had a lot of these symptoms which match with the metabolic syndrome simply because of the transition that they've gone through, not because they've changed anything in their life or had any radical behaviors, but just that's happened. Can you just tell me a bit more about perhaps what's going on there and how the two perhaps coincide?
Yeah, so obviously, you know, women have estrogen. And so for, you know, the majority of life from puberty up until perimenopause, estrogen is what we describe as a cardioprotective hormone. So it basically makes our body distribute fat in different places. So usually around the bum and the thighs. And that's almost, if you think of it as a healthy place to store fat. Mm-hmm. Also, women have subcutaneous fat, which means fat under the skin. And so this is, you know, perfectly normal. It's, you know, we need to have fat on our bodies because we are, you know, basically for childbearing. And I know that doesn't happen necessarily these days, but, you know, that is why our bodies are like they are, because they've adapted for that. And so what happens is in perimenopause is that estrogen levels start to drop down, and that can cause changes in fat distribution in the body and body composition. So it can also reduce like muscle mass as well, and change bone density. So there's quite a few different things that are going on there. And that's not mentioning, you know, the mental effects of that as well, you know, the brain fog, the feeling sort of, you know, low, and lots of other different symptoms that women have in their minds as well. It's a very sort of complex process, really. I mean, hormones are very complex in the body. There's so many controlling your hunger, your satiety, your fullness, your fat distribution, like where your fat is distributed, and then also your blood sugar levels as well. And all of these things are talking to each other. And so if one hormone changes suddenly, that's going to have a knock-on effect on all of the other ones. And so that's why women often see fat moving from being distributed around the bum and the thighs and the hips to the front of the body. So women can sometimes, depending on, you know, how much fat they have on their body, become more of a male shape in that way. So if you notice men, you know, if they put weight on, they tend to put it around the middle. And there's this sort of analogy of the apple shape versus the pear shape. So women generally are the pear shape because they have fat around here, and that's a healthier place to have fat. And then men have it around the middle of their body. And the reason for that is because they don't have subcutaneous fat stores like women do, but they store a lot of fat around their organs. So the viscera, it's called, or visceral fat, which is a term you might have heard of. And that shows much more of a danger to, you know, metabolic diseases, like, you know, anything to do with the cardiovascular system or the heart and the blood vessels, anything to do with like the pancreas or the liver and the kidneys as well, you know, and fat sort of stored in the middle of the body can indicate that. And so that's one of the shifts that women will go through in that period of their lives when they're going from perimenopause into menopause. And so that's why a lot of women will gain weight as well. It's something that can be managed through diet, but there is also like a hormonal element to it as well. And that can also be managed through diet as well. I know a lot of women take HRT these days, and I know some people think that that's amazing and it's really helped them, and then others don't. So it really is a very individual choice and process that everybody goes through.
Yeah, you put that really nicely. And I also like how I love the woman's body sometime. Like that actual visual, seeing your fat distribute to other places of your body, yeah, like a little bit of a sign, hey, something's changing.
Yeah.
And what can we start looking at?
Yeah.
Just to finish with the HRT, I read, I'm reading Maisie Hill. She's also from England. She's got this menopause power, and she puts it so nicely. She says, you know, no one gets a medal for giving childbirth with drugs or without drugs. And
exactly,
no one is getting a medal for going through menopause or perimenopause with, you know, hormone therapy or without. It's everyone has their own process.
And yeah, absolutely.
That's the idea of that.
Yeah. And there's no right or wrong way to do it either. You know, it's just whatever feels good for you at the time. So,
but let's talk about what you were saying. All of this is manageable through the diet. And I think this is one of the largest take homes. It's like, if you have all of these symptoms, of metabolic syndrome, the knowledge that one can have that you can correct it with diet and lifestyle, that's huge. And as you said, like, it starts all with the mind. And I honestly believe that as well. And our habits that we create. But let's venture into perhaps the top things that we can do when it comes to our diet and our nutrition to support ourselves, to perhaps specifically, you know, with this abdominal weight that you can carry with metabolic syndrome, what can we focus on there?
Yeah, so most of these metabolic conditions begin with inflammation. And I know that inflammation is this term that kind of gets used a lot these days. And I know a lot of people have heard of it, but they don't really necessarily know what it is. Mm. So I'm just going to explain quickly that inflammation is a normal immune response. It's actually, you know, part of the body's healing process is inflammation. You know, it increases blood flow to the area. It protects against infection, sends white blood cells there for healing. So, you know, inflammation as a sort of an acute state is not dangerous. You know, you cut your skin, it gets a bit inflamed. That's normal. And obviously we can see it when it's on the outside. But we also can develop inflammation internally, and that can be down to dietary and lifestyle choices. So not just food, but other things that we choose to do as well. And so one of the kind of biggest impacts that you can have on reducing the symptoms of metabolic syndrome is by reducing inflammation in the body. So the way to do that, and the way that I promote to do that, is by using whole plant-based foods. And this has kind of come from my own experiences and also a lot of reading that I've done through my sort of career, I guess. And my first experience really of this myself in my own body was with an Ayurvedic doctor. So Ayurvedic medicine is a traditional Indian medicine, which has been around for sort of 5,000 years. And it's really based on the individual's body composition and their theory of that. And then using foods to rebalance the system. And I really like this kind of idea of balance. One of the things you have to do with metabolic syndrome is rebalance everything, because there's sort of imbalances in various different places. So, you know, using food to heal those imbalances is what Ayurvedic medicine really does. And I had a hormonal imbalance in my body. I think it was like 2019, so around COVID, just before COVID. And I went to a Western doctor and she just gave me hormones. And I was like, oh, I don't want to do that. I took one and I just felt awful. So I went to see this Ayurvedic doctor and she gave me this plan, you know, with various different foods, but also like lifestyle things as well. And, you know, within 2 weeks, my periods like rebalanced and started like normal again. But it wasn't just that, it was like how I felt mentally, you know, the brain fog went and I was sort of gaining weight around my middle and I just felt like horrible. So, and I felt depressed actually. And so having that experience in my own body, that was the point actually that I decided to become a nutritionist, because I was like, why are we not using food to help people heal themselves? Like, you know, the automatic response is always medication, and that's actually getting worse, not better. You know, I think we're medicating more and more and more for people, and that's kind of the expected treatment now.
It is.
But we have this ancient wisdom, and, you know, why are we not using this? And that was sort of like, well, this is going to be my mission now, is to help people to heal naturally. And, you know, I also read around the same sort of time, the China study.
Yeah.
And also Whole, which is Colin T. Campbell's, like both of his books and all his research that he did. And you know, there's this huge kind of body of evidence about the healing powers of plants. And, you know, I'm not anti-meat, I'm not anti-food in any way, really, but I, with the people that I work with, what they're consuming, and often their diets are high in saturated fat, high in added sugar, like free sugar, not fruit. I don't mean that. I mean, you know, sugar that's been added to food, and also so low in fiber as well, and high in salt. So maybe like lots of oils and things like that. So replacing those foods with whole plant-based foods is one of the most effective ways of reducing inflammation and therefore reducing the symptoms of disease. Fiber in particular, I mean, I think fiber is a superfood. I don't know about you, but it's so like underrated, you know, and it's one of the things that can have such a huge impact on all of these conditions that I'm talking about, because, you know, fiber helps to regulate your blood sugar level. So if you are suffering with prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, it can really help with that. It helps you to feel full. So when you eat a meal full of fiber, like you feel satisfied afterwards. It helps you to go to the toilet easily. You know, you don't get any of that issues with that. And it really kind of helps to cleanse your system, like your digestive system, by moving everything. And one of the ways of determining health is to look at your stools and to see, you know, the regularity of them. So fiber is, and all plant foods contain really high fiber. You know, whether it's like a vegetable, a fruit, a seed, a nut, a bean, a lentil, like whatever that is, you know, they all contain high fiber. And so by removing the focus away from like a lot of meat, which a lot of people do eat, and also convenience foods, which, you know, is a whole other topic, really, because they're so widely available and it's harder to get whole foods. You know, by replacing those with whole foods and also preparing your own food more, which a lot of people struggle with because of time. And I understand that. But, you know, my message is also the way that you've been living now is not serving you in terms of your health.
Yeah.
So what you need to make changes. And quite often it's about prioritizing health. You know, we prioritize like work a lot of the time over pretty much everything else. You know, prioritizing it over family sometimes and over friends. Like sometimes your health has to come first. And I think until you have a health issue, we don't necessarily value it as much as we should. I think that is a societal problem, actually. I don't think that's an individual issue.
Yeah. And it's until your body kind of stops working where you really think, okay, now I need to make a difference.
Yeah.
And what I really like about your approach, I like how you say, we need to go plant-based. Not that you're against animal products. I'm also of the same approach of this exactly. Not against animal products at all. But I think for most people, just to kind of summarize what you said, for most people, it's like we're living in this highly processed world and we're so used to eating highly processed meats and highly processed foods that we're not even prioritizing this plant-based.
Yeah.
So spending 3 months just by bringing it in and doing a bit of an overhaul, it makes you have more awareness. It makes you actually think about, oh, where am I getting my fiber, this meal or this snack? Is there even any?
Yeah.
It brings the awareness and it makes people starting to have change. It's actually one of the biggest things I see. If I hear people go vegan, they'll usually say, you know, the first thing, I felt a massive change.
I think it's interesting because you use the term vegan and I just wanted to kind of explain the difference between veganism and being plant-based, you know, because they're not the same. And, you know, the food industry is kind of attached to both of these terms now. Vegan was like the original one they sort of started using, and now they're kind of using the plant-based one. You can eat vegan food and be very unhealthy and suffer with the same issues that we're talking about here with metabolic syndrome. Because it's labeled as vegan or plant-based, it doesn't mean it's better for you. It could be like highly processed or ultra processed. And so that's why my sort of, you know, narrative is about whole foods a lot more as well, because, you know, if you're eating whole foods, they haven't undergone processes. They haven't had things added to them that aren't real food. And they're not going to have the same like metabolic destruction that, you know, that it would have if it was. So, and, you know, veganism is a lifestyle. It's very much it's everything in your life. You know, you look at the clothes that you wear, the makeup and cosmetics you use. You look at things like nail varnish and, you know, everything like shoes, clothing, and food. So it's a whole lifestyle. Whereas being plant-based is more just about your diet and actually not necessarily cutting out all animal products from your diet, but having like a foundation of plants. That's what my message is to my clients is, you don't have to never eat eggs again. You don't have to never eat chicken breast again. You can have those things occasionally, but it needs to not be the foundation of what you're eating every day.
Mm.
And I think that's a really important thing to explain, because a lot of people are scared of cutting food out of their diet. And I understand that, you know, if you enjoy, you know, scrambled eggs on toast, you don't want to have to never eat that again. You know, you want to be able to have that occasionally. And that is absolutely possible. Mm. But there needs to be like a period of transition where you're switching from the foundation of animal products to the foundation of plant products, and then reintroducing things on like a moderate basis so that you can achieve balance. And I've been on my own journey with that. Like, I was vegan, and then, you know, and then my periods, all this stuff happened with my periods, and I was like, I need to do something different. And then the Ayurvedic doctor got me to have ghee. Yeah. And, you know, because she was like, it's the thing in India that is super healing, and that it's very high in nutrients as well. And I have slowly kind of like become a lot more flexible with what I'm eating, and I actually feel better for it as a woman. I think, you know, this is about women as well. And I think, you know, at certain ages, we do need to make sure that we're giving our bodies enough of the right nutrients, you know, deficiencies and stuff like that. So and a lot of women that I know that have been on a similar journey, you know, they've been vegan, they've gone the other way again, not completely the other way, but they've found like a balance in the middle. And that's what I really want to help people to do, is to find that balance that works in their body. So that's
important.
And it's
almost like the extreme sides, you know, because you have, I guess, perhaps there's some people who are not even aware of what they're having, and perhaps high meat processed, a lot of convenience packaged stuff. And then perhaps the other side. And I think it's about when you say balance, and when I use the word healthy, I feel like that's also very hard to say, like, what is healthy? But you know what you feel good on, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, when your body feels good and you're having full evacuation and you've got energy, so you know that something's working for you. So, yeah, I guess I really like your approach.
I think it's important to not be extreme. You know, I don't think extreme doesn't work. You know, diets are extreme, aren't they? In the fact that they reduce calories massively, they cut out whole food groups, and it's not sustainable. Like, this has to be sustainable. It has to be a lifestyle that you can apply for the rest of your life, because otherwise you're just going to go back to your old behaviours and your old habits and create the same problem again. And I think Einstein's quote about, you know, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing again and expecting a different result. And that's exactly the same with diet. You know, you have to do something different. Otherwise, you know, trying a diet and then doing it for 3 weeks and then going back to your old habits, you know, that again has a whole load of metabolic problems with it. And the diet pattern, this diet weight cycling is very, very damaging for the body and actually can lead to more weight gain.
What is it? There's like a statistic, 95% of people who go on diets end up where they were when they started after the diet.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, because of the metabolic changes that happen, you're more likely to gain more weight after a diet, because you've been in such a severe period of starvation, that the body will, the mechanisms like change, your metabolic rate drops, you actually lay down more fat tissue. And so when you do start eating again, you're actually more hungry because your fat tissue controls your hunger. And so if you have more of those cells, they're releasing like more of hormones to kind of make you feel more hungry. So it is definitely not a good cycle to get into. And, you know, if anybody is on a diet, I would really, like, really encourage them to stop that and look at something different, like a different approach.
Different approach. Let's go there, because I know that you're into something and I'm also really into it. And it's called intuitive eating. And let's just go there for a bit, because I think when it comes to diets, we know that they don't work. Even if they have good intentions, like, oh, just quick weight loss thing or something. Mm. You're right. The hormones kick in and we end up putting the weight back on. And although weight loss is not the goal, for example, when we're trying to, you know, correct metabolic syndrome, people still want to have that kickstart.
Yeah.
And intuitive eating, maybe can you just give us a brief summary for someone who's never heard that?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So intuitive eating really is kind of a set of, I think there's 12 different kind of elements to it. And that one of those is the non-diet approach. Mm. So it kind of relies on trying to uncondition yourself from everything that you've learned about the diet industry, and then recondition yourself to trust your body and trust your own hunger signals and listen to what that is telling you. And eat the foods that you want to be able to eat in that moment without like your mind telling you, oh no, that's naughty, you're not allowed to have that. Mm. So there's also intuitive eating is also a lot about like the language that you use around food as well. You know, the listening to that programming that we've all got about diet and, you know, about how we should be eating and what we should eat and what we shouldn't eat. And it kind of gives you freedom, really, intuitive eating. It gives you the freedom to eat whatever you want in the moment with awareness and with understanding of how that's going to make you feel. One of the sort of first things that happens in the detox week with my clients is that they sort of go through this kind of reduced inflammation process. They see changes in their blood sugar. They feel much more sensitive to the food. Mm-hmm. Because they've kind of allowed their digestive system to rest and to stop processing and assimilating. And then they develop this sensitivity and they notice how food feels in their body. Mm-hmm. And that is a really important part of this kind of relearning a new way. Mm-hmm. Because if you can sort of feel, you know, the blood sugar rush that you get from eating a chocolate bar, for example, compared to how you feel after eating a banana, that just helps to kind of educate you on a like a visceral level. It you know, it helps to reinforce the things that you're learning.
Yeah.
So food sensitivity and, you know, feeling the ability to eat the food things that feel good for you is one of the biggest messages in intuitive eating. But also like no guilt around food. So if you do decide to have a donut or whatever and you feel like you really need that in the moment, then great. And don't beat yourself up about it. Because maybe your body is craving fat because, you know, for a woman, maybe you're about to have your period or whatever it is, you know, and there is a reason that you're wanting that. So with metabolic syndrome, it can be a little bit complicated because, you know, because of poor blood sugar control, you can get more cravings. Mm. I always say that my program is a mixture of science, psychology and spirituality. It brings like all of those things together, and intuitive eating is just part of that, really.
Mm, yes. And I love that actually, because you can't, if you have a syndrome or a symptom, which is perhaps craving more sugar or you have low energy or whatever it is that's kind of bringing you to that, it's hard to honor this intuitive eating when you've got like something else pushing it.
Yeah.
I think having a whole, like a complete understanding of what's actually going on, why am I feeling that way? How can I correct it? And then relearning, okay.
Yeah.
How I eat. Oh.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And also, you know, having a food that is sweet but higher in fiber is better than having, you know, no sugar at all. So satisfy the craving with something that's going to give you like satisfaction, satisfy that sweet craving, but that's not going to spike your blood sugar. And
massive undertaking you have in your work. And it is like, it's not easy. Yeah. And for someone to then try and do this on them by themselves, it's also really difficult.
It is, absolutely. So
it's amazing. It's amazing that you've also gone through your own journey to get here, realized how powerful it is that you can change the things that you do in your lifestyle and your nutrition to basically transform your life. So great work you're doing.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Where can we find you if someone wants to learn more? If someone's like, I think I've got metabolic syndrome, or I want to learn more, where can we find you?
So I have a website. So it's naturalnut.co.uk. I offer a free discovery call or a free consultation just to kind of have a chat with people and find out if I can help them and also if it's a good fit for them. Yeah. And, you know, it gives them more of an idea of exactly what to expect as well. Because, you know, not everybody's ready to change, actually, and that they might realise that, you know, they might think they want to, but actually maybe they're not quite ready. Usually, like through my website, I've also got Instagram and Facebook. And yeah, that's usually how people get with me through that.
And if you could kind of impart, and I like to never say that there's one thing because it is never just about one thing, but if you could impart perhaps something that someone could start doing now in kind of perhaps correcting their metabolic syndrome or looking after their health, what could they start doing from today?
I think, that's a really good question. I think probably the biggest thing is looking at the labels on food. So start to be more conscious of, you know, the level of processing that the food you're eating has gone under. So is it an ultra processed food? And how you can tell that is by looking at the food label. And if there are one or more things that you wouldn't find in a normal kitchen, then it's probably ultra processed. Quite often there'll be things that you've never heard of as well. So, and trying to eliminate those from your diet as much as possible, you know, starting to educate yourself about what ingredients are. So, and what foods are more whole foods. And so looking at the ingredients and identifying ultra processed or more whole foods and going for the whole of food is always going to be the best place to start, I think. And read and listen to podcasts, you know, read books, like start being interested in food and interested in nutrition. And that just kind of leads you on to a different like way of life. And a lot of my clients, they start recommending books to me now towards the end because they're so into it, you know, they're like, wow, I didn't know this could happen. And, you know, it really starts sort of like a new hobby in a way, and a new area of interest.
Completely beneficial
for
them. And when they're feeling well, then they're improving their quality of life, which then has this wonderful ripple effect. And, you know, their relationships,
their
product, everything just starts to improve.
Yeah, that's it. I was going to say when you first said that, I thought, and also the impact that it has on family, you know, particularly if you've got children, you know, they see the change that's happening and they will also copy, you know, depending on their age. But, you know, children learn what they live, don't they? And so if they see this sort of new healthy version of you, then it's going to impact them for the rest of their lives as well. So, you know, and also other people, they see that you've changed, they see how healthy you look, and you know, you've got this like new energy and vibrancy about you, and that impacts so many other people.
Contagious. So, yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wonderful. Sammy, thank you so much for being here and
my pleasure
sharing your wisdom. Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.